from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 26th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. Yes, I know it's Wednesday, but thought that 15-cent move earlier today should make it an interesting discussion with him. We'll also take a look at the weeds you might, as a farmer, want to attack this fall, and we'll hear too about the weather forecast that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's Wednesday, the 26th day of October. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Kind of a dangerous thing, Dan, because I'll have you on today, and then we'll find out whether you're right tomorrow, and we'll have you on again. I appreciate you.
Yeah, that's real dangerous.
Okay, so why did soybeans decide to rally today? There weren't exports that I saw overnight.
Well, why don't I today talk the technical side, try to forget about the record crop and all this harvest and all this kind of rigmarole. And if you look at the pure technical side of both these corn and soybean markets, it's been a system trader's dream, especially in corn. Corn started flashing buy signals for the system trader way back during the first week of September. Once that market bottomed there in late August, when everybody had to either sell their old crop corn or re-up for new storage charges, that seemed to have kind of put the bottom in. But since then, the systems that I watch have all been long. You got a double up signal back at the end of September, and basically you're getting another buy signal here today with a solid close above the 100-day moving average on the lead futures contract. And this is also the 38% retracement level back toward the high that we had here earlier in the growing season. Now, the key here is we do need to see some follow through from these strong advances, but the trend is your friend, and being short during the month of October usually does not pay. I mean, October is one of those seasonal months that the market wants to climb higher during October, and that's exactly what corn did. Corn started out with a contra-seasonal move during September, and that's kind of like when contra-seasonal means you're making headway when you're swimming upstream. And then when the seasonal turns with you, then you're swimming downstream, and it's easier to swim. And this is exactly what's happened to corn, because first part of October, the seasonals begin to turn higher. So corn was able to stay in its sideways to higher trend. And, we came off of a 301 low, and today we closed the lead futures at 354. So we're 50 cents above our seasonal low. Now, corn has a tendency to do 50% retracements, and we've talked about a head and shoulders bottom in corn for some time, and a 50% retracement coincides with the head and shoulder bottom objective of somewhere up in this 370 area. And it's going to be key here. I think we need to pop out this 59.5. We need a good solid close above 360, and I think all of a sudden we would get a layup right toward that 370 level on December corn futures. Now, when you take a look at soybeans, it started giving system traders buy signals. They haven't really had buy signals for their very long. They've only been around for basically a couple weeks. The buy signals begin to kick in around October 14th. So they've only been kind of long here for a couple weeks. The one thing that we're getting ready to do, and your distant contracts have already done it, is your 20-day moving average have moved above the 50-day moving average on soybeans, and that's usually one of the signals a lot of system traders will use to, add to their long positions. But on a lead futures basis, we got our first close now above the 23.6% retracement level of the decline off of our early our summer high that we had, or our spring high. That is usually a strong signal to open up the gates now for a push on up to the 38% retracement level, which is up here around this 1039, 1040 area. And on a lead futures contract, that would tell you you're going back to your August high points. And one thing that you notice on beans is that we're breaking out of a sideways trading range. We've been in kind of a, if you look at the January contract, which is soon to be basically the lead contract with November ready to go into expiration, it posted its first close above the 100-day moving average here today. And it did post a close above the August 22nd high. So we're kind of on the verge here of breaking out of a sideways trading range that's been basically around August, September, let's say 2.5 months or so. And there's other technical systems here that's getting ready to flash additional buy signals. The 38% retracement level on the January contract comes in here at 1032. And then if you can penetrate that, soybeans have a tendency to go in 38% retracements or 62% retracements. And a 62% retracement would put technical objectives of upwards of 1090 on the table for the January contract. It would put objectives about 1103 on the table for the lead futures contract. Now, I ain't saying we're getting there, but what I'm trying to emphasize is system traders, technical system traders that use algorithms, moving averages, other technical tools are probing the long side of this market. And they're having success in doing that. Now, short term, the soybean market is at a point where it could be considered overbought. But when you go over and look at the weekly indicators, we're in the early stages of just rolling up off of an oversold condition. And if this strength would continue on into November, then you'd have your monthly indicators beginning to roll up out of an oversold condition. So the trend is your friend. And right now, from a technical perspective, your technical traders are going to push this thing as far as they can push it, because all of the systems that they look at tell them to go long. Now, fundamentally, we'll maybe talk about that tomorrow. But for right now, it's a system trader dream come true. The fundamentals are keeping the fundamental traders bearish and scratching their head and trying to figure out why things are going higher. But your technical traders are looking at the charts and the systems, and it's telling them to probe alongside, and they're the ones that have all the chips, at least today anyway.
All right. I look forward to having that discussion tomorrow that includes the fundamentals, because there are some awfully big bean yields out there. However, we're probably by this time more than 80% done. We were 76% done or thereabouts between Illinois and Iowa, that is, on Sunday. So it should be a good discussion. Thanks for joining me early on this Wednesday. I appreciate it, Dan.
Very well, Todd.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He's out of Waco, Texas. A couple of quick items in today's agricultural news. Federal search warrants have been executed in at least 4 Missouri counties in a criminal investigation of alleged misuse of herbicides containing dicamba. The probe follows widespread complaints of drift-related damage to 41,000 acres of crops. That according to the Daily Duncan Democrat. The warrants were served earlier this month to gather evidence of possible violations of the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act and other federal crimes, that according to the news outlet. Since June 22nd, the Missouri Department of Agriculture has received more than 100 complaints related to damage to alfalfa, cantaloupe, cotton, soybeans, peaches, purple whole peas, rice, tomatoes, and watermelons. And the other item of note for today, ChemChina's proposed $43 billion takeover of Syngenta has been delayed. That to an in-depth probe by the European Commission. The two companies missed a deadline last week to submit plans to resolve antitrust regulation concerns, paving the way for a wider investigation. In August, the deal was cleared by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which reviews foreign transactions for any national security threats. That's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Aaron Hager, Extension weed scientist, to talk about control of some pesky weeds and how it might be done in the fall. First, let's define what weeds might be most useful to control in the fall in the state of Illinois.
The ones that are typically targeted, Todd, for fall herbicide applications may be perennial species, which we typically see a higher level of control with translocated herbicides applied in the fall as compared with if we would apply the same treatment, let's say, during the growing season. But by far and away, I think most of the interest in fall herbicide applications is really targeted around some of the winter annual species. Species such as chickweed, henbit, purple dead nettle, depending geographically on where you are in the state, other species, some of the mustard species, the crestleaf groundsel or butterweed, of course, that turns a lot of our fields yellow in the springtime. And one that really lends itself very well to a fall application across most areas of the state is marestail or horseweed. A lot of the horseweed marestail in Illinois still behaves as a winter annual, which means it's going to germinate in the fall, typically would overwinter. Survival percentage over the wintertime is really dependent upon how harsh the winter is, how much snow we have, etc. But then resumes growth in the spring. And one reason in particular that a fall application is generally going to be more effective on marestail compared with spring is simply because across a very large part of our state right now, much of the marestail that we see has evolved resistance to glyphosate. And glyphosate continues to be very widely used as a burn-down herbicide in the spring of the year, but unfortunately with the evolution of resistance now in marestail to glyphosate, the tank mix components that we would be using in the spring really have to carry the load on the marestail. And based on some anecdotal observations around the state in 2016, a lot of times the tank mix partner was just simply not sufficient enough to take the marestail out.
Is there a difference here between those who might be doing pre-plant tillage operations and those that would not?
Essentially, marestail tends to be the more of a problem in our either no-till or reduced till, and certainly more so in soybean than what it would be in corn. So certainly spring tillage remains a very viable option for marestail. Still very, very effective, whereas our spring burn downs are going to be a bit more variable. Again, depending on where we are, what our resistance profile is in the population, and what sort of a tank mix combination are we using in the spring.
What do we do in the fall to control this marestail?
Actually, the fall really lends itself quite well to control marestail. Again, much of it still behaves as a winter annual, which means that it has emerged now in the fields. Another advantage, of course, it's still small right now. It's going to produce a few leaves, what's called a rosette of leaves. That's the overwintering stage. It's not going to become very large. And the third reason would be simply that we can use products in the fall that are very effective on marestail at rates that typically lend to very high levels of control compared with using those same products in the spring where we run into rate restrictions or we also run into pre-plant intervals that don't always lend themselves quite well for soybean planting in the spring.
What kind of products?
We typically encourage people not to get too carried away with fall applications in terms of the cost incurred with it. If you're targeting something like marestail, very effective treatment is nothing more than a quart rate of 2,4-D ester in the fall. We can use the appropriate rate. That's a much better rate for mare's tail, small mare's tail in the fall of the year compared with trying to control larger mare's tail with only a pint of 240 in the spring of the year in front of the burn down. Products like dicamba can be used in the fall also that are tend to be very, very effective on mare's tail. So really it doesn't necessarily have to be a terribly expensive fall treatment. Depending on the time that you do this, really dictates whether or not you should think about adding a residual herbicide. If we were talking and having this conversation toward the end of September, first part of October, the value then of including a residual herbicide for those winter annuals that maybe hadn't emerged by the time that we made the application would be higher compared with where we are now here at the end of October. A lot of this winter annual has already germinated, already emerged. So the need or the necessity or the value of adding a residual herbicide from this point on is probably going to be, you know, fairly marginal at best. And we certainly don't ever encourage people to try to use fall applications of residual herbicides with the idea that that's going to get us control of summer annual species the following spring.
Is there a different plan of attack for the other weeds?
Well, for something like if you're talking about a biennial species or a perennial species in the fall of the year, we're typically talking about using a fall herbicide of something that's going to translocate throughout the plant. Something, again, like glyphosate, for example, is extensively translocated. Even 2,4-D dicamba would be options also. If you're talking about trying to work on perennial grass species, again, glyphosate would be very effective. If you're more targeting some of the perennial broadleaf species, you've got a whole host of options that you could use there.
Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Aaron Hager is a weed scientist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, let's start internationally, please. They've been having some problems with the harvest season in China. What's up there?
Well, you know, China usually is pretty dry once you get into the month of October, and usually ideal for getting all kinds of field work done, the harvest of summer crops as well as the planting of wheat and rapeseed. But this year seems to be a little different. It's been raining quite a bit over the past couple of weeks, and the whole month of October actually has been notably wetter biased, and not just in a small region, but across a big part of the country. And it is raining quite significantly right now in the east central areas. We've already had several inches of rain in the last couple of days. We've got at least another 1 to 3 coming up between now and the end of the weekend. So field work is pretty much on hold across the east central parts of the country, and there is some concern about getting into those fields and getting the harvest completed and planting of winter crops successful. And right now I think that all that will come together, but there is a certain level of worry that will be with us for at least a few more days. Next week does look better.
On the subject of getting into the fields, farmers across the planet in both the northern and the southern hemisphere are working. In the south, they want to put in corn and soybeans. And here in North America, they're taking out corn and soybeans, and they're looking to plant hard red winter wheat. How are conditions?
Well, you know, in South America, I think conditions are looking up quite a bit. There's been a lot of chatter out there about La Niña-like conditions possibly hurting the production down there, but I can't find a single reason for buying into that argument right now. I think there will be a problem a little later down the road that with too much moisture maybe occurring in parts of center, west and center south Brazil. This would be in January and February. At the same time, there might be a little dryness in the southern part of the country, but I don't expect that to be a real festering issue. In the meantime, conditions for planting have been and will likely continue to be almost ideal across the country. There has been excessive rains in Rio Grande do Sul over the past 2 weeks. And impressive rains running anywhere from 5 to more than 13 inches of rain in a single week, and that's too much. And their wheat crop has suffered big time. But that's only in Rio Grande do Sul. Everywhere else in Brazil, things are fine. Argentina's had very good rainfall also, and they are looking pretty nice. It got a little bit too wet for a while this week, but they are now drying down or will be in the coming week. It'll be an aggressive week for planting progress there. In the U.S., you know, the biggest concern I have in the U.S. isn't so much the harvest of summer crops as much as it is a concern about the condition of winter wheat in the High Plains region from Nebraska to Texas. Texas Panhandle. These areas have gone about 6 weeks now without a real good amount of moisture. It's been fairly warm out there, and that crop's not doing really well. The harvest of corn and soybeans, though, is progressing along. We have a little bit of interruption every once in a while, but nothing that's going to cause a huge problem.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. That's Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, inviting you to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find a link to our Farm Assets Conference, or you can just go directly to farmassetsconference.com to pick up your tickets. They're just $30. Buy them today.